Welcome to the K-Mud News. I'm your news director, April Lewis, and I'm glad to be with you for this broadcast. In this episode, we have stories on a bill headed to Governor Newsom's desk that would change management of the state's demonstration forests, road information from Caltrans, and this week's sports report. But first, some local alerts and updates. This is K-Mud News. Starting off with news from Humboldt County. Community members will have another opportunity to participate in an update of the Humboldt Bay Area Plan. The HBAP is a plan that is certified by the California Coastal Commission that establishes policies on how the unincorporated area around Humboldt Bay and its coastline can be used. It is in the process of being comprehensively updated to address issues including sea level rise, tsunami awareness, and land use requirements. You can provide input at the Planning Commission meeting on Thursday, September 3rd at 6 p.m. Community members have the option to attend on Zoom or in person at the Humboldt County Board of Supervisors Chamber, located at 825 5th Street in Eureka. The Planning Commission meeting will start at 6 p.m., and the meeting agenda with more information about the Humboldt Bay Area Plan and workshop can be found on the county's meeting agenda webpage. In Redway, there was a tree that fell blocking the northbound lane of Redwood Drive this afternoon, Friday, August 28th, between Redway and Highway 101. The tree initially blocked traffic north of Redway for a few hours before traffic was redirected around the hazard. From the Humboldt Sheriff's Office, we have an update on the August 25th deadly shooting in Hoopa. Next of kin notification has been completed. The victim has been identified as Leonard Zachary Van Wormer, 33 years old, of Crescent City. As the investigation progressed, detectives quickly identified two suspects. Investigators also determined that one of the suspects, Eric Marshall, had an outstanding warrant related to a previous robbery. On August 27th, at approximately 10:43 a.m., patrol deputies assigned to the Hoopa Valley area located Eric Marshall at a residence in the 900 block of Tishtang Road in Hoopa. Marshall was taken into custody without incident and subsequently booked into the Humboldt County Correctional Facility on homicide and robbery charges. The second suspect has been identified as 17-year-old juvenile Joseph Eugene Marshall, also known as Joseph Reed. Joseph Marshall is currently wanted in connection with this homicide and is believed to be in the Hoopa Valley or surrounding communities. Joseph Marshall is described as a native male juvenile, approximately 5'8" tall and weighing 157 pounds. He should be considered armed and dangerous. Members of the public are urged not to approach or contact him. Anyone with information regarding the whereabouts of Joseph Marshall is asked to immediately contact the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office. From the United States Attorney's Office in the Northern District of California, Jessica Engel was sentenced today to 2 years in federal prison for embezzling more than $550,000 in funds from the Yurok Telecommunications Company. U.S. District Judge Maxime M. Chesney handed down the sentence. Engel, 43 years old of Oregon, was indicted by a federal grand jury on September 25th of 2024. She then pleaded guilty on September 3rd of 2025 to embezzlement from an Indian tribal organization in violation of U.S. code. In her plea, Engel admitted to stealing nearly all of the funds that were held in the account of Yurok Telecommunications Company, a company created at the direction and largely funded by the Yurok tribe in Humboldt and Del Norte counties. Engel admitted to stealing over $550,000 from the YTC bank account between September of 2021 and May of 2022. The prosecution was handled by the National Security, Cyber and Special Prosecutions, and General Crime Sections of the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Northern District of California. Attorney Colin Sampson and former Assistant U.S. Attorney Sophie Cooper prosecuted the case with the assistance of Lori Worthen. The prosecution is the result of an investigation by the FBI, with the assistance of the Yurok Tribal Police. And up next, our main stories. This is KMUD News. Assembly Bill 2494, which would change how California manages its demonstration forests, is headed to Governor Newsom's desk. KMUD News reports. Last week, KMUD News reported on a rally in Ukiah over the Jackson Demonstration Forest and CAL FIRE plans to harvest approximately 500 acres of timber. Environmental advocates felt that CAL FIRE was attempting to get the harvest in before the passage of California Assembly Bill 2494, which redefines management of California's 14 demonstration forests from timber production to more environmentally friendly management focused on restoration and climate resilience. Yesterday, Thursday, August 27th, AB 2494 passed through the California legislature and is now headed to Governor Newsom's desk for eventual signature or veto. KMUD News spoke with Melody Meyer, conservation attorney for Arcata's Environmental Protection Information Center, to learn more about AB 2494 and the potential future of California's demonstration forest system. And with AB 2494 now passing through the state Senate and on the governor's desk, how are you folks feeling about the potential of the bill being signed in short order?
We're cautiously optimistic. We feel that the bill is really a natural progression of Governor Newsom's existing policies on tribal stewardship and conservation and wildfire resilience. So we hope that this is sort of a no-brainer for him to seal in his environmental legacy on these issues. And we hope that he sees how much benefit this can provide to a lot of rural communities who have previously relied on, you know, traditional logging activities as well, transitioning to more restoration forestry and climate research.
How would it align state demonstration forest systems with state codified goals around climate and land conservation?
Our biggest objective is to have these forests be able to count towards 30 by 30, which is conserving 30% of California's lands and waters by 2030 as a climate mitigation and adaptation strategy. And so currently, when we've gone to CAL FIRE in the past and asked them, how can we improve management of the forest so that it's more climate friendly, they've pointed to this statute and said, we are bound by this mandate that says we have to demonstrate a level of commercial logging that wouldn't allow us to count these lands towards conservation. And so what we're trying to do is just allow these lands to count for that by saying that the management doesn't have to demonstrate this level of commercial logging. Instead, it should demonstrate things like biodiversity conservation and wildfire resilience. And that way the state can start demonstrating for a variety of landowners how to do this on their own lands. So there's both the direct benefit of 30 by 30, having these forests count towards that, but also the benefit of being able to demonstrate the types of techniques that landowners can do on their own lands. And then in terms of tribal nature-based solutions, we're also really hopeful that tribes will be supported by CAL FIRE to co-manage these forests and show that traditional ecological knowledge can be a good pathway to climate resilience as well.
Could you expand a little bit on how AB 2494 might create better economic stability for rural communities? You know, you talked about this a little bit, but of course, these communities have historically relied on commercial logging to provide jobs and tax revenue. You know, what are some of the opportunities here?
Rural communities have historically relied on logging. And as we've all seen, particularly in the North Coast, that industry has been declining, and it's been picking up a little bit in terms of wildfire resilience activities. But for the most part, there's a lot of mills that have been shutting down. And so a lot of folks are left wondering, you know, are we going to increase logging or are we going to transition to something different? This bill allows CAL FIRE to provide support to landowners. And again, it goes back to the idea of this being a place to demonstrate forestry techniques. how to do more restoration type forestry, wildfire resilience projects, but still have it be a source of revenue. And then the other piece of it as well is that we predict under this bill, CAL FIRE will do more restoration work, which provides more jobs than are currently provided under traditional logging projects. So think about the scientists that work on these things, the amount of crew that's needed to do hands-on vegetation removal. There's tribal advisors as well that get involved, cultural burning, prescribed burning. So there's just a whole suite of things that can be added to the management by updating what we're trying to see on these forests. And then the bill practically has an effect of providing more stability to CAL FIRE itself because it allows them to draw from the Timber Regulation and Forest Restoration Fund, which is a fund that's supported by a assessment on timber and engineered wood products. So CAL FIRE has struggled in the past, specifically at Jackson Forest, to provide a lot of the maintenance to recreation facilities that it needs to provide or that the community wants to see. And so we're hoping that this will be able to give CAL FIRE the extra support that it needs to be able to do that kind of work.
Is this bill missing any changes that you or the organization you're with would like to see regarding demonstration forest management?
So the bill has gone through a lot of changes throughout the whole process from when it was introduced back in February. It's been a really interesting process to see it become sort of a more holistic document and think about how it's actually going to be implemented on the ground. So I think there's a lot of room for that implementation, both through like the formal rulemaking process that Board of Forestry could do to implement the bill, but also for more hands-on community involvement. So at Jackson Demonstration State Forest, they have the Jackson Advisory Group, which is made out of, you know, community members, members from the industry, members of conservation organizations. And it's really an opportunity, if this bill passes, to rethink that whole process and think about who wants to be directly involved in management. And of course, a big piece of that is having tribes have a greater say in the way these forests are managed. And then in terms of the things that we missed out on in the actual legislative process, there were some amendments to the statewide reporting on timber harvest plans and how it has or has not helped with ecological outcomes. And so those amendments had to be removed because the State Water Board flagged them as potentially costing them up to $13 million to update their IT system. So obviously that's very concerning because it seems like something straightforward that should happen, being able to report on how timber harvesting regulations are or are not helping our situation with environmental outcomes.
You know, with this bill, of course, this is, as I understand it, just applying to demonstration forests. Is there anything from this bill or from even the process of figuring out the goals for this legislation that should be or could be applied to other forest systems and in public lands in California?
The opportunity for tribal co-management is so huge right now. And thinking about how to actually implement traditional ecological knowledge onto all types of land ownership, that's something that would be great to see. And then just in terms of having land management align with existing statewide goals, especially around climate change, because we're seeing such an urgent need to use all of the tools in our toolbox right now to address climate change. Just thinking about what are we leaving on the table and how can we make sure that we're doing all we can to make these forests have a greater contribution towards carbon storage and sequestration or wildlife habitat. So there's definitely a lot of things that folks might not realize about the way our public lands are managed, and there's always improvements that we can make. And that's the thing about legislation that I've learned is, you know, we're constantly updating it, and that's a good thing. It should be, you know, something that we're creating as sort of a living policy and not something that's set in stone.
With AB 2494, Governor Gavin Newsom now has on his desk the ability to change how the state's demonstration forests are managed. According to Melody Meyer and other environmental lawyers and advocates, it would be a massive step forward for these forests and the communities surrounding them. But there are still questions around how the bill would be implemented and the involvement of groups like Native tribes in future demonstration forest management. Reporting for KMUD, I'm April Lewis. Here's Ray Hamill with this week's KMUD News Sports Report.
Football returns to the North Coast this weekend as the local high school and college seasons get set to kick off. Hello and welcome to this week's KMUD News Sports Report. I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com. We'll have more on opening weekend in just a moment as we take a look at all of the big local sports stories of the week in what was a busy week around the county, including a new beginning for the HDNL, news of a big early season showdown in girls soccer, some volleyball updates, as well as a new partnership and new home for a couple of College of the Redwoods teams. But first up, one of the most highly anticipated weeks of the sports year is upon us as we get set for the opening weekend of the 2026 football season. Six of the nine local high school programs will be in action, along with College of the Redwoods, as they all look to get the new campaign off to a winning start. The game of the weekend here on the North Coast will take place at Fortuna High School on Friday night, as the Huskies get set for a tough test right off the bat against a St. Helena team that made the North Coast Section semi-finals a year ago. And Fortuna fans will be hoping for a better start to the season this year. In 2025, the Huskies lost their opening three games and four of their first six games before closing out strong and reaching an NCS championship game. Head coach Mike Benbow and his players will be hoping for a better start as they look to successfully defend the conference championship they shared with St. Bernard's 12 months ago. The good news for Benbow and his team is that they have plenty of experience in the trenches this year, with all five of their starting offensive linemen back from a year ago. And that experience on the lines might be just what they need to get the fall season off to a successful start. Three other HDNL teams will also be in action on Friday night. The Del Norte Warriors will make their longest road trip of the year when they open at Oakland High School in the Bay Area, while the Hoopa Warriors travel to Trinity and the Ferndale Wildcats play at Anderson High School. Both Del Norte and Hoopa feature new head coaches this year. Deshoney Rice takes over from Curtis Kane at Hoopa, while Nick White returns to the sideline in Crescent City for the first time since 2022, taking over the reins from Darren LaFazio. Two other HDNL teams will kick off their seasons on Saturday, both of them here on the North Coast. On Saturday afternoon, McKinleyville will host Cloverdale, while on Saturday night, the Eureka Loggers will play Windsor at the Redwood Bowl. Three other league teams, the South Fork Cubs, the Arcata Tigers, and the St. Bernard's Crusaders, will all begin their seasons next week. The local college football season also kicks off this weekend, with College of the Redwoods heading to San Jose for a Saturday afternoon showdown. Several local players are expected to play key roles for the Corsairs this fall, including defensive lineman Henry Westfall of Ferndale and Dane Brown of Del Norte, as well as Ferndale playmaker Tanner Pigeon, who was recently named the Cal High Sports Division 5 State Athlete of the Year for 2026. The recently graduated Pigeon starred in three sports during his time as a Wildcat: football, basketball, and baseball, and he was named conference MVP in football and baseball as a senior. According to CR head coach Jason White, Pigeon has been a pleasant surprise during preseason camp, including a strong showing at a recent scrimmage at Southern Oregon, and the exciting playmaker is expected to see plenty of action at various positions on offense this fall. After their season opener, the CR players will return home to host Reedley in their home opener next weekend. CR will play its home games at the Redwood Bowl this year. Switching gears, there was a big announcement from the HDNL this week. The league schools have voted unanimously to change the names of the Big Five and Little Four conferences to better represent the two league conferences. Beginning immediately, the Big Five will now be known as the Pacific Conference, while the Little Four will be known as the Redwood Conference. For a long time, the Big Five traditionally featured the five largest schools in the league, while the Little Four featured the smaller schools. But with a growing emphasis on competitive equity throughout the North Coast section and all across the state, the makeup of the league's conferences has changed in recent years, with smaller schools like St. Bernard's now competing with the bigger schools in football, and larger schools such as Del Norte competing with the smaller schools in girls' soccer. Earlier this year, league officials asked the HDN Student Athlete Advisory Council, which is made up of two student athletes from each of the league's schools, to come up with some different names, and they voted unanimously to accept the Pacific Conference and the Redwood Conference. Switching gears, it was a busy week for several HDNL soccer teams, and it's been a good start to the new season for the Ferndale and St. Bernard's girls. Both teams are off to a 3-0 start, and they will play each other in the Upper Lake tournament on Friday night, giving local fans a taste of what's to come in conference play later in the campaign. On Monday, the Wildcats defeated Fort Bragg 3-0 for their third straight win. The defending conference and NCS Division 1 champs have outscored their first three opponents of the season 16-0. The Crusaders have been almost as impressive, posting one-goal wins over Del Norte and Fortuna before a 3-1 victory over McKinleyville on Wednesday. The SB girls have also been impressing in local high school volleyball this week. On Wednesday evening, the Crusaders travelled to Fortuna and came away with a hard-fought 5-set win. But they had to battle for it, overcoming a 2-sets deficit against a very young Fortuna team that features several freshmen. Also in the news this week, on Thursday afternoon, College of the Redwoods announced that the Corsairs baseball and softball teams have reached a 20-year agreement with the Bear River Casino Resort to host practices and games at the Bear River Sports Complex. And that's this week's Camelot News Sports Report. Until next time, I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com.
Here are the latest road advisories and construction information from Caltrans.
This is a Caltrans District 1 road information bulletin for Humboldt County State Highways for the week beginning Friday, August 28th. On 36, expect up to 15-minute delays near Carlotta. Slide removal continues west to Grizzly Creek Redwood State Park. Check Caltrans District 1 social media for updates. Expect delays west of Maple Grove at the Little Arabee Creek Bridge and at the Butte Creek Bridge. On 96, expect delays north of Willow Creek and near Orleans. On 101, expect up to 10-minute delays north of the Mendocino County line. Bridge work continues at the Eureka Slough Bridge and the new half signal is now active at Airport Road. Expect delays north of Oregon near the Del Norte County line. On 211, expect up to 20-minute delays at Fernbridge on the 31st. On 254, expect delays north of Wyatt. On 299, expect up to 10-minute delays east of Blue Lake. This is a Caltrans District 1 Road Information Bulletin for Lake of Mendocino County State Highways for the week beginning Friday, August 28th. In Lake County on 20, expect delays from Nice at Lakeshore Boulevard to Lucerne at 2nd Avenue on the 31st and 1st. On 29, expect overnight delays in Twin Lakes from B Street to C Street. And in Mendocino County on 1, expect delays at various locations from south of the Pelican Bluffs Coastal Trail to south of Buckhorn Cove Road. Expect up to 10-minute delays south of Elk. Expect delays at the Wages Creek Bridge and near the Wan Creek Bridge. On 20, expect delays east of Fort Bragg, west of Three Chop Road in Willits and near Capella. On 101, expect overnight delays in Hopland. On 162, expect up to 10-minute delays from east of US 101 to south of Covelo. On 175, expect delays in Hopland at US 101 and east of Hooper Ranch Road. This is a Caltrans District 1 Road Information Bulletin for Del Norte County State Highways for the week beginning Friday, August 28th. On 101, expect up to 20-minute delays at various locations from Klamath to north of Last Chance Grade. Expect delays at the Dr. Fine Bridge. On 197, expect up to 10-minute delays near Ginny Lane. On 199, expect up to 20-minute delays near the Middle Fork Smith River Bridge. For further updates, join us on social media via Caltrans District 1.
A California bill to crack down on copper theft heads to Governor Newsom's desk. Suzanne Potter reports.
This week, lawmakers in Sacramento passed a bill to help authorities fight organized copper theft rings. Assembly Bill 1941 is now headed to Governor Gavin Newsom's desk. Copper theft caused thousands of phone and internet service outages in California last year, so AT&T is taking a proactive approach by triple-bolting manholes and adding sensors to phone wires. The company is also offering a $20,000 reward for tips that lead to a copper theft-related conviction. Redis Alcott, a lead investigator for AT&T in Los Angeles, says the thefts aren't just an inconvenience. They're a matter of health and public safety.
911 and emergency services. Dispatch systems are being knocked down to where they can't receive the calls. The effect of it, it's massive. People need to not only treat it as a property crime, but it's something a lot more serious.
Less than 3% of AT&T's customers in the Golden State rely on copper wire telephone service, but the company says it spends $1 billion a year to maintain the copper network, money that would be better spent on more reliable wireless and broadband. Susan Santana is president of AT&T West. She says the scarcity and high price of copper are fueling an epidemic of theft.
The best way to stop copper theft is to stop relying on the copper and transition to a modern network, which involves fiber and wireless deployment.
Santana says the company will be investing $19 billion in California, in part to reach an additional 4 million households with fiber broadband and to strengthen wireless coverage across the state. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
That's all for our news broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our rotation of broadcast engineers, Dennis Marr, Katie Phillips, Biana Federico, Michael McCaskill, Larry Lashley, and Javier Rodriguez. Also thanks to our reporter for this broadcast, Ray Hamill, and our assistant director, Bridget Karstensen. KMUD News is now on streaming platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening. You can also follow us on social media at KMUD News, including Facebook and Instagram. Do you have issues important to you that deserve more attention? Are there stories we're missing or that you're curious about? You can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Redwood Community Radio Incorporated is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingtao, Wailaki, Wiyut, Wilcut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection that these tribes have to the region. I'm April Lewis. Stay tuned in and have a great weekend.